KELA. Views expressed on this show are those of the host, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of the station, its management, or advertisers. Daily programs are recorded for playback, podcasts, and promotional purposes. And now, let's talk about it.
Good morning, and welcome back to the Let's Talk About It show on AM 1470 KELA and KELAAM.com. I'm your host, Peter Rubarno. Back with another edition, a Thursday edition of the Let's Talk About It show on this December 22nd. And it is my last, unless there's going to be some weird vacations where I'm filling in, this will be my last Let's Talk About It show of the year. And my special guest this morning, it's really a special guest because he is my seatmate in the Senate, and it is Senator John Braun. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Peter. Thanks for having me on. It's great to be here.
Yeah, we really appreciate you being here. You've done, a great job in the Senate. And, you know, over the course of the last, especially couple of weeks, people have been calling in, talking about what our plans are, what the agenda is, what next session is going to look like. And so from the Senate perspective, let's talk a little bit about some of the priorities in the upcoming session for the Senate Republican Caucus.
Sure, you bet. And some of this is going to sound familiar because many of the challenges we've had over the last couple years, they haven't gone away. Folks I talk to around the district, frankly around the state, are still focused on the same things. They're focused on public safety, what we did to our law enforcement community in 2021, and how do we get that back on track. They're focused on affordability. Folks working out there who were just barely able to afford their rent, their mortgage, their gas, their food for their families. You know, 6 months ago, now they probably can't afford it. And they probably got a raise in the meantime because of inflation. So we have a lot of work to do on affordability. And then finally, we have a lot of work to do on K-12 public education. You know, we've in many ways left our kids behind during the pandemic. We've not done nearly enough to help them with learning loss. We have a lot of things the state should be doing to get us back on track.
And since you're the Senate Republican leader, you've had a perspective a little different than maybe mine, which is just the 20th district. You've been in and around every corner of the 20th, but you've also been in and around every corner of the state. Are you hearing some of the same issues all around the state?
Absolutely. And see, this is the thing. We talk a lot in many cases about how do we pull our state back together, you know, politically, you know, legislative priorities. And when you talk to folks around the state and around our district, you know, these are the things that we have in common. These are the things that just regular people out there trying to live their lives, trying to take care of their families, these are the things they're concerned about. So these are the things I think we should be focused on, the most important things in most people's lives right now. It's not the only thing. There's a lot of things that we deal with in the legislature, as you know, Peter. But these are the things I think should be the priority.
If you're just tuning in to Let's Talk About It, AM 1470, maybe you're streaming KELAAM.com. My special guest this morning is State Senator John Braun here in the 20th District. And we're talking about some of the upcoming sessions, some of the priorities, some of the issues that we're seeing around the state. And you brought up one I thought that's really important, because when you're in the legislature, you always hear from the other side about the upside down regressive tax system, but it seems like that's been perpetuated and magnified by that same party over the last couple of years.
That's absolutely true. And there's a lot of detail here. We don't necessarily have time to dig into all of it, but yeah, they propagate this what I would call is a myth that we're the most regressive state in the union. If you actually look at the analysis, the way the analysis is done just doesn't bear out. But to the extent that is true, and certainly there is truth that we have some regressive taxes in our state, the current majorities, current Democratic majorities, have just piled on. A best example is about to hit us square in the forehead right after the first of the year with the Climate Commitment Act. This is, for all intents and purposes, a giant, complex gas tax. And we know without a doubt, when they look at their own claims for a regressive tax system, the number one cause of that is the gas tax. And the Climate Commitment Act will add, you know, people vary because of the way it's implemented, but 40 to 60 cents per gallon, unprecedented, not even close to gas taxes we've implemented in the past. And this is a very aggressive tax. It's the folks in the middle who can just barely afford it are going to get hit the hardest.
Well, and that gas tax or that increase in fuel costs probably, well, and again, it's not just in our community, but it's going to hit the people who, like, teachers who have to drive to school, nurses who have to go to a hospital, and those especially in rural districts.
That's right. People who live out here because they choose to, or because this is where they can afford to live, and then they commute often long distances for their work. These are the folks who are going to pay the highest price. It's what I sometimes call a luxury belief by the folks in other parts of the state who aren't affected nearly as much by this. They don't mind. They don't think about what they're doing to the other people in the state.
And maybe you could talk a little bit about, you know, for those who maybe aren't as concerned about fuel costs, maybe you even just live in West Seattle, for instance, but what's it going to do to other products and services? I mean, is it going to increase their costs, especially for seniors who live on fixed incomes?
Well, yeah, this is the thing that I don't think many people understand. When you see an increase at the gas pump, that's not just affecting the gas you're putting in your vehicle. It's affecting transportation. It's affecting other sources of energy. It's driving up the cost really across the board in ways that are ubiquitous. I mean, we are already, as we said earlier, we already have an affordability problem in our state and in our country. You know, folks in the middle are really getting squeezed, and this is really, you know, cranking down even further. And it's across the board. We see increases in other areas of our lives is going to be connected to the Climate Commitment Act. And what's unfortunate, Peter, I'll say is whatever you think about reducing carbon, this isn't a very effective way to do it. So not only are we making people's lives more difficult, we're not really solving the problem.
Right. And it's that issue, as well as, you know, if your concern is carbon, it's not necessarily that you can just reduce carbon here. I mean, there's impacts globally that we're kind of ignoring.
That's right. I mean, we are, you know, of course, to us, Washington is a very important place, but we are still just one part of the world, and we're only going to be able to have so much effect. And the other thing I would say beyond that, when you talk about reducing carbon, by far, at least in my view, and I think the numbers bear it out, by far, the most effective way is to give people choices. Mm-hmm. You know, 7.5 million people in our state, we've seen, you know, over the last decade, really, people make choices. For the same reason, to reduce their carbon. And sometimes it's because they feel that way, you know, about climate and carbon. Some it's because they want to be efficient. Some just for any number of reasons. But when you give people choices, think about this. We have organic food in the grocery, not because the legislature said it has to be there. We have it there because people buy it, right? When you talk about things to reduce carbon, whether it's, you know, if you want to talk about electric cars or how you heat your home, or there are any number of choices, people make choices. And I think those choices have a much, much bigger impact on reducing carbon. And if you look at the data, we know the states to our south and in British Columbia to our north have had carbon programs like the Carbon Commitment Act for years. And yet Washington has beat them in the reduction of carbon for many years. So that's not because of this legislation. It's because people make different choices.
Yeah, and it's more of a value choice, right? It's about should we be legislating values, or should we incentivize change rather than punish your current behavior?
That's absolutely right. Let government kind of get out of your way and let people decide what's most important to them. And I have a lot of confidence people, you know, broadly, whatever their political views, will make good decisions. Not everybody, but most of them will.
And on this issue specifically, I mean, you've been in the legislature for how many years now?
This is my 10th year.
I mean, are you seeing that kind of divide growing, or is it about the same?
No, I'd say definitely the divide is growing. I mean, give a simple example. I was very fortunate when I was elected in 2012, entered the legislature in 2013. We formed the majority coalition caucus with 23 Republicans and 2 Democrats. These were 2 Democrats that felt strongly about a fiscal responsibility, fiscal sustainability, understood that the other side was going in the wrong direction. But my point is, we had folks who would actually step across the aisle in a very big, meaningful way. And in addition to those, we still had what they then called the Blue Dog Caucus, that were still in the Democratic caucus. We had a sizable portion of the other side of the aisle who were willing to stand up for things they believed in and agree with us. That doesn't exist nearly to that extent. We have 1 or 2, and nobody's interested in coming to our caucus right now.
Yeah, right. If you're just tuning in to Let's Talk About It, AM 1470 KELA, maybe you're streaming KELAAM.com. My special guest this morning, State Senator John Braun. Now, let's talk about education a little bit, because that's an issue that's not new to you. From really, as I remember when you were elected, from day one, education was really important to you, and then you worked a lot on McCleary and some other issues. Can you talk about the state of education today?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I would tell you, and it's not a high visibility issue, that part of it, the funding part of it, but we're on a bad path. We, you know, as you said, we had the McCleary decision, and just to remind folks, it's been over a decade now, that said the state wasn't properly funding basic education, that we were too we were relying on local levies too much, and we know, you know, structurally that's unfair. It's particularly unfair to rural counties. And we know also that's a repeat from 30 years earlier. We had the Dorn decision. So the Constitution says states responsible for funding public education. The legislature over years and a couple times now has failed to do their duty. We've had to respond to lawsuits. It took us 5 years to work through that, and that was hard. We had to find, you know, billions of dollars to put into K-12 education. And because we were in the majority of the time, we were committed to doing that by setting the right priorities, by not insisting on new taxes, but by finding ways to prioritize our spending, live within our means. And we did that. We increased funding for education by billions of dollars. And I think and we did a lot of good things. Now, do I have any, you know, since was it perfect? No. I think there's a lot of things we could have done better and we should do better. But we made a lot of progress in properly funding our schools and getting them to the schools that, you know, to the students that really mattered, really going after individual students instead of just, you know, what we you know, just a model of what that student looks like. So I give you that background to say we're headed down that same path. Just a couple simple numbers, Peter. When we were essentially finished the McCleary process and the court said, yeah, you're good, and we felt like, yes, we're good, we were the K-12 public education was about 51% of the operating budget, which I think is about the right number, somewhere over 50%. Today, it's 43%. In the governor's proposed budget, it's even lower. This is the wrong direction. We are not prioritizing education like we should, and we're starting to see districts have to rely on local levies. And we know very absolutely where that leads us. We've been down this path twice in our state's history. We know where that leads us. We need to reprioritize funding basic education.
So are you seeing, because I, you know, this is perception as well as I think reality, but are you, you know, talk a little bit about the disparity that a lot of parents are seeing growing between property rich and property poor districts in terms of the quality of education.
Yeah, so what you have to and funding education is a very complicated thing, and I have some appreciation for it, but I think it's nothing I could easily explain, but a simple way to think about it is if you're in Seattle, I'm not saying that to pick on Seattle, you could say Bellevue, you could say the San Juan Islands, anywhere with high assessed value, literally for pennies, for 10 cents on the dollar, you know how your taxed on property taxes is a certain rate per $1,000, you know, a small amount per thousand in these districts raise thousands of dollars per student. You know, compare that with, say, somewhere in our district, a rural community, Onalaska, PL, Winlock. You have to get into the several dollars, sometimes $3 or $4 per thousand, and you still don't raise as much money. So what you have is this very unfair tax situation where the affluent parts of our state are paying pennies on the dollar in their property tax to raise lots of money for students, and poor parts of our state are paying dollars on the thousand to raise significantly less money. And as you can imagine, you know, more money in these districts means they have more options for their education for their students.
And if you're just tuning in to Let's Talk About It, AM 1470 KELA and KELAAM.com, my special guest this morning, State Senator John Braun. We were talking a little bit about affordability, and now we're in a discussion about education. And it's an issue that's important to all of us, and it should be. Even if you don't have children, you know, successful communities have a quality education. And so we should want a quality education to set our communities up for the future. A lot of us, especially parents and husbands of teachers like I am, you know, kind of look at the education system and say, you know, a lot of these kids are just falling through the cracks.
Yeah, and that goes to the other big issue we have. I mentioned earlier in our education system right now is what we, you know, collectively, some districts did a much better job than others. But during the pandemic, we kept our students home. And that we knew that would be a problem. You know, all of us understood early in the pandemic that we need to be careful and safe, and we knew fairly early that children weren't affected the same way adults were, and yet we kept them out of school in some cases as long as 2 years. And the learning loss couldn't be more clear. We have the testing results that show that, and we need to do much, much more to get them back on track. And certainly this is a very important to parents and folks involved in education, but it should be an issue important to everyone. It really should be. This is a community issue. This is a business issue. This is about preparing our future generation for success. And, you know, it may not be clear. It's clear to me, but losing 2 years, losing 1 year in your education sets you back. You talk to teachers, Peter, you probably know this from talking to your wife, but I hear from teachers that say, look, I teach, you know, pick your grade, seventh grade, and the teachers that are showing up in my classroom, they act like fifth graders.
Right.
They just haven't, you know, not just their academic development, but also their social and emotional development has been held back. And we have to help them get back on track, or they're not going to have the success that we want and, frankly, we need later in their lives.
Well, and I think it's generally accepted that COVID has impacted our children's mental health and the learning loss. Even if the kids went back to school, it wasn't the same, right? Because of masks and everything else. So how do you think that, and you can't speak for the governor, but how does he justify not investing in those things that we think are a priority?
I don't think he can. I think that I'll tell you, that's some of the role of the minority. We need to articulate that. We need to push hard that we can't stand idle and let this happen to our children. And it takes investment. It takes investment in summer school. It takes investment in intensive tutoring. I'm not an educator. I don't claim to have all the answers. But what I do know is we can't stay silent. We can't stay still and let this continue to happen. I do not believe it will just fix itself.
Right. And one thing you have been very vocal on in supporting is that, and you mentioned it early on in our discussion about education, is that, you know, educating children individually and giving them options, not just giving parents options, but giving children options and CTE and career ready. And so you've been really vocal about that. Can you talk about that as well?
Yeah. I mean, so we've talked about our challenges. Right. We have a tremendous opportunities as well in education. And some of our local school districts have done a fabulous job. Others are really coming along in the great direction in terms of preparing their children for additional education, for higher ed, or for apprenticeships or other vocations that can be very fulfilling and very, you know, rewarding for them and prosperous for them, frankly. We need to continue to push that, and we have to do it with a broad mind that says not every child is going to go off to a university. Not every child is going to be a welder or a plumber. They're going to find the thing that interests them, but let's give them the tools they need to be successful in any vocation they choose, because frankly, they deserve that, and as I said before, we need that. We need them to be successful.
Yeah. And if you're just tuning in to Let's Talk About It here on KELA or KELAAM.com, my special guest this morning, State Senator John Brown. We're talking a little bit about education. And I couldn't agree more, especially you've done a lot of tours of different schools and different education programs. I think it's just amazing when you walk into even just a pottery class and you ask a kid, you know, what your favorite class is, they say pottery, and then the teacher says, look, they're not great in math, but pottery gets them in the classroom, gets them to come to school. How important it is that we have these programs for them to expand in the core areas of education.
Yeah, that makes me laugh, Peter, just because all my children took the pottery class in high school, and none of them were good at pottery. Hope they're all listening. But they were pretty good at other things, thankfully. Yeah. But the point is, your point is well taken, that kids are good at different things. Adults are good at different things. We should, you know, test the waters in different areas, find where we're good. But whatever it takes to get kids into school, get them interested, get them committed to themselves and to their future, we should be doing, and that takes a broad array of opportunities.
So what about the other really big issue? I mean, we've talked about education is important. We've talked about, you know, affordability. One of the big issues is public safety, and that's and it shouldn't be a controversial issue. It should be an issue that everybody should be, especially if you're coming from Seattle, after what you saw over the last two or three years, being safe in your home or your business or walking the street should be of utmost importance, but it feels like in the legislature it's not.
Yeah, there's this huge divide, and I am a little optimistic we're closing that divide somewhat, but there's this kind of mentality on the left, particularly on the far left, that you know, laws don't matter, that you know, prosecuting folks for violating the law not only doesn't matter, that they, and some will suggest it may even be racist. And I think, and that's not to downplay the challenges we have in law enforcement. They are real, but they're small compared to the overall number of folks who are involved. We want, I think everybody wants, a well-trained, accountable police force, a law enforcement force. And I think that's true in Seattle. I think that's true in Lewis County. What varies is how we get there. And we you know, the Republicans, we get there, we think, by hiring great people. We already have great people, hire more, by giving them the training they need, by giving them the tools they need to keep our community safe, and then by trusting them, give them the trust they deserve. That's where the other side thinks that they need to sort of micromanage them and really restrict them. And what we've seen, the results couldn't be clearer. What we've seen is a huge increase in crime, and from property crime to violent crime, they're all off the charts. On, you know, have historic records being broke every year since some of these laws were put in place in 2021, and it's true across the state. It's not just true in Seattle. It's true down here where we live. It's true on the east side of the state. And we know, I think we know pretty clearly that we got off on the wrong track. Look, we had some tragic occurrences in 2020. We all remember those. And folks in the majority came into session determined to do something about it. But what they did is replace one tragedy with a whole series of other tragedies. Right. And it's sad and frustrating. But I will tell you, I think we have a path to fix some of this. We fixed a little bit of it last year. Right. We fought hard. We got some folks on the majority to come along with us, and we fixed a few. But we have more to fix, particularly, as you know, the pursuit issue. It's going to be up again this year. We have a big challenge in front of us with the Blake issue. I think we got on the wrong track there, and we have the opportunity to fix it. And frankly, in that case, save people's lives.
So would you say that one of the priorities for the Senate Republican caucus would be recruitment, retention, and training of our law enforcement officers?
Absolutely. That's a great point. One thing I didn't mention is, and I think you know this, maybe the listeners don't, but even before the pandemic, Washington was the lowest in the country in terms of the number of law enforcement officers per capita. The lowest. We're actually 51 of 50 because D.C. is also ahead of us. And it got materially worse. We're not even close now. You know, it's a huge, huge climb just to get back to average in that list. And I think that should be our first goal. But that takes enormous investment. We had a great bill last year. I'm sure we'll have it again this year from Senator Jeff Holey that proposed a tax credit that allowed the cities and counties to take an offset against the state sales tax to invest in more law enforcement officials. It's going to be a steep climb because we have, candidly, I think the actions of the majority have vilified our police officers to the extent that it's hard to recruit good folks, good young folks who want to be in law enforcement. So we have some rebuilding to do. It's going to take investment. It's going to take, you know, tools and training. But we have to get after it if we're going to get our communities safe and where we want them to be in terms of public safety.
If you're just tuning in to Let's Talk About It show, my special guest this morning is State Senator John Braun. We're going to take a quick break for our sponsors, then we're going to be back with State Senator John Braun. We're going to continue this discussion about affordability and public safety.
It's your local real estate professional, Heather Stewart with Blade Realty. With the changing real estate market, you may be thinking of sitting on the sidelines this quarter, but it's really a super time to stay in the game with buyer competition slowing and more inventory on the market. Now more than ever, you'll need that trusted resource with a proven reputation and track record to help you win in real estate. I'd love to be on your team. For stellar service in your real estate ventures, find me, Heather Stewart Realtor, on Facebook or at heatherstewartrealtor.com.
Timberland Bank's top-rated new banking app is made for those who roam the woods, those who summit peak after peak, those who may forget their selfie stick, but remember their bear spray. For those who live life in the fast lane and the slow trail, the Timberland app is just for you. Pay bills, make person-to-person payments, even deposit checks. If you've got bars on your phone, you've got all of Timberland's great services close by. Was that an owl? Timberland Bank, member FDIC.
At Visiting Nurses Foundation, we support families in the community during their time of need. Through fundraisers, events, and two thrift store locations, Visiting Nurses Foundation raises money for equipment, programs, and vital care for patients in 8 counties for home health care and hospice. We also have a scholarship program to support future caregivers. Make a donation or visit one of our thrift stores. Learn more at visitingnursesfoundation.org. Visiting Nurses Foundation, supporting families and our community.
Get jolly good deals during the Wrap It in Red Sale on now at Market Street Ace and Lincoln Creek Lumber. Great deals on barbecues featuring Weber, Traeger, and Big Green Egg grills, including free assembly and delivery. Save big on top brand tools featuring Craftsman and DeWalt. Shop online or call for curbside pickup or delivery. Don't miss Lincoln Creek Lumber and Market Street Ace's Red Hot Buys going on now through December 24th.
What's happening?
Let's get to work.
Yeah!
On the web, on your phone, and on the air.
K-E-L-A.
Let's talk about it.
All right, welcome back to Let's Talk About It, AM 1470, K-E-L-A, and K-E-L-A, AM.com. I'm your host, Peter Barna, with my special guest this morning, State Senator John Braun. We've talked about some affordability issues. We've talked about public safety and education. One issue that we talked about on the show the last couple of weeks is the governor's budget, which was pretty massive. And I know I've read some of your comments and your releases regarding regarding that large budget. Do you want to talk a little bit about it with our listeners?
Sure. Thanks. I always like to talk about the budget. That's one of my biggest interests in the legislature, because I think it's the most important document we do. It shapes everything else we do. And frankly, it's the place where the state is taking people's taxes and should be minimizing the amount they take. And then when they do, they should be making sure they're delivering services. But the governor's budget, you know, it's a big, big document. It spends a ton of money, $70 billion. So I don't claim to know it thoroughly just yet, but some things right off the bat strike you. One, it's another huge increase in our state's operating budget, now well over twice the budget that we had when Jay Inslee came into office 10 years ago. And growing, here's the thing that people don't always get. They look at the growth and say, well, that's pretty significant. But then compare that to the growth in just household budgets around the state. We have one of the highest growths in median income in the country, and yet our operating budget is growing at twice the rate of the average of median income, and therefore the average household budget. So you could, that puts it in perspective. If you could all of a sudden, you know, what would you do if you were you're trying to afford to grow your budget at your home by double? Right. Just you couldn't do that. So that there's a lot going on inside that budget. Here's the thing that really gets at me, and it's not that we want to invest in certain things, and there's always good things to invest in. You can't spend $70 billion without doing something useful, and I certainly appreciate the investments in mental health, as an example. But our unwillingness to go back and look at the budget and say, are there some things here that we shouldn't do any longer? You know, no business, and frankly, no household does that. Would say, hey, we're going to do everything we did last year and then do some more. They look at what they did last year, what worked, what didn't, either what provided a return, what didn't, what people cared about, what they didn't care about, and where can we find some savings and then possibly reinvest that. That's not how the governor looks at that. He's like, we're going to do everything we did before, and we're going to do some more. We're not going to question our previous judgments, and that's just not realistic.
Yeah. Well, and the funny thing is, if you made $50,000 when the governor became governor 10 years ago, that income would be about $66,000 now. The governor's mythical massive growth in budget would be $50,000 when he came in. It's $112,000 now.
Yeah,
that's just amazing.
That's a great way to put it, Peter. I mean, it's gigantic, and it's not necessary. Yes, the state needs to deliver some services, but the state also has the responsibility to make sure they're delivering the right services, that they're affordable and they're sustainable, and we're not doing. That's the last thing I'll say on that budget, is he does all this on based on the reserves. We know he's setting up a huge bow wave in the future, that they're going to come back and they're going to say, hey, we need a bunch more new taxes, and that shouldn't happen.
Well, Senator Braun, thank you for coming in today. Merry Christmas, happy holidays.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on, and Merry Christmas to you and all your listeners.
Yeah, Merry Christmas to all of you, and happy holidays from me, Peter Barno, your host here on Let's Talk About It, the KELA KMNT family. I hope you have a great holiday and a great new year, and look forward to being back on the show maybe sometime next year. Please be safe. It's cold. It's icy out there. Drive safely.